Famous football philosopher once said, a win is a win in any language. And a brief respite from the league enabled the Royals to pick up an elusive win at the weekend against MK Dons. Could this be the spark that reignites our league form? Welcome to episode 358 here at the Tilehurst End podcast. And with me right now to discuss the weekend's win and a massive week coming up on the pitch for Reading is Ryan and, of course, Ross. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, mate. How are you? Of course, Reading can be quite stressful, but how's things been?
Yeah, still keeping right, well? Not too bad. Just about surviving. So we're getting there. Ross, did you like that quote that I came up with just now?
It's very good. Yeah, you asked me last week if I cared about this particular game, and now that it has W next to it, I very much care about it. So. Very good.
Do you know, do either of you know who said that quote that I used at the start?
I don't.
Would it be yourself?
It was me just now. Yes, the joke. That is the joke. Yes, exactly. Ryan's got it. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's on air. Perfect. Brilliant. Yeah. That's because it doesn't make sense, does it? A win is a win in any language. Just absolute nonsense. But before we head into the recap of a win, and a win is a win, doesn't matter what we're talking about in terms of quotes. Massive thanks to ZCZ Films, who, of course, continue to sponsor us in what is turning out to be possibly the worst season I have ever known, ever in the history of Reading Football Club. I'm sure older listeners will tell me that this is not true, but at the moment, it feels like we're only going one way. However, we can discuss a win. So we're going to get into that right now in the recap. 3-2. Massive.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, Ryan, nine changes were made. I didn't know that, to the starting 11, the one that featured against Portsmouth the previous weekend. A couple of interesting bits, really. I think Pereira in goal, we can talk about in a minute. Nelson Abbey came back, never should have been dropped in the first place, really, but he was back in the lineup. Rashisha, who is a player that I absolutely love, really, really excited about him. But the interesting point was that Sam Hutchinson came back in. Now, we all thought that he'd been absolutely sidelined for reasons unknown, but he was kind of parachuted back into the starting 11. We can talk about the goals sort of later on, but what overall did you make of the performance against MK Dons at the weekend?
Well, a win is a win at the end of the day. Something that we don't get to say too often, and we seem to be Ruben Sellers Cup Royals at the moment. But score three goals, see a game out just about as well. It wasn't too bad. There were some high quality goals in there as well, to be fair. A very high pressing move for the third goal. It was quality ball through from Lewis Wing for the first one. Overall, it was pretty decent performance.
Yeah, and I think it's important that it was Hatchiman and Wing as well that are the guys that are building confidence through that game, right? Because there are players that we want to play better in the league. I think Kelvin's been good, but it's been a while since he scored in the league. So get some confidence back with a nice goal, by the way, against the Dons at the weekend. Check that one out if you haven't seen it. It's a really nice finish. Important that those two players are the ones that were contributing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, overall, it's important to get the win. It's important to get some sort of confidence moving forward. Why are we doing, I say so well, because on paper 3-2 against what is essentially inferior opposition would probably raise a few eyebrows and go, okay, but it wasn't plain sailing. But what is it about the Cups, Ryan, at the moment that we are doing, well, you know, better than the league? You know, why is that the case?
I guess you could say it's something to do with there's a little bit less pressure. Maybe it's because they feel like, not to get too political, but that points won't be taken away from them because they physically can't get these taken away from them. Or it could be something to do with the fact that obviously we're rotating the squad and there's players coming in. So it could be to do with those players wanting to prove themselves to Sellers a little bit more and fighting that a little bit harder than the ones that they think are so-called starters. And that might be a non-point because I know he has changed the team a fair bit, but there could be something in that he's he's changing the 11 around. These players are like, right, I want to get in the first team for Saturday in the league. I might as well just give 100% because this might be my only chance for the next 2-3 weeks or whatever, or to show at least for a decent amount of the game, not like a 20-minute cameo at the end.
I mean, you know, it's a good point about, you know, raising the competition levels and kind of getting people involved. I mean, there were some interesting choices there, really. I mean, one player we haven't mentioned is Tom Holmes, who came back and he was on the bench. Harvey Collins, who is currently in action or was in action up until about 10 minutes ago for the under-21s against West Bromwich Albion. I mean, you know, looking at this team, this much-changed team, Ross, do you think that there is a possibility that we will see something along these lines against Bristol Rovers tomorrow night, potentially even against Shrewsbury on Saturday? Like, is this something that he was kind of tinkering with in his mind as manager? Or is this just the kind of, well, we just got to get through this game, chuck some players in that haven't had much game time and see what happens?
I think, like I was talking about with Wing and Ahip Hatchiman having been, you know, the players that were able to produce some decent performances and get something out of the game. I think that Ruben will have wanted to breathe some confidence back into the games of the people who are going to play an important part in the league. You know, like, regardless of whether or not Lewis Wing starts all of our Pizza Cup games or whatever, I think that we'd still expect him to be playing in the league. And still, at the start of the season, we expected him to be one of the more important players in our midfield. So I think that right now, any time that we can get to, like I say, breathe confidence into the players that need to be getting us points in the league is a good thing. Definitely, there are some guys. I think Rashisha, you know, it's a good point to call him out because he's been excellent with the U21s. He seemed pretty good to me whenever he's been with the league team too. So I've been a little bit confused as to why he hasn't had more chances, but good to see him, you know, get that chance on Saturday. And certainly it's a chance to get players like that some more experience with the first team, although that might be somewhere I just sort of disagree with Ruben and wonder why he hasn't been involved already, to be honest. So it's a chance for, you know, Ruben to see, I guess, what we're seeing in some cases in some of his players. And in other cases, it's a chance for him to, you know, breathe confidence into the players that he's going to be using.
I mean, you know, obviously we've talked about the changes and two players that really in recent times, Ryan, have been under pressure a little bit from the fan base, rightly or wrongly. Harvey Nibbs, Femi Aziz, they were both dropped, but then did come on. And, you know, obviously Nibbs did score a goal, you know, played a bit of a crucial role in the win overall. Do you feel like with those two players, we're talking about a confidence issue? Are we talking about a tactical issue? Are we talking about the fact that they're just not good enough to play for this football club at this present time? And that's obviously the most, you know, severe element of what we're talking about here. But, you know, what is it with these players at the moment? Are expectations too high? You know, where are you at with these two?
So, with the confidence side of things, I think Aziz, there definitely is an element in confidence issues. I think even Salah spoke about in his post-match about them potentially being some confidence issues where he missed a couple chances. That, with him, I think there is a quality player in there. We've seen flashes even back in the Championship when he had small cameos. We're like, okay, right, there is a player in there. He definitely can play to a League One level. So in terms of ability, I'm not too worried about him. Harvey Nibbs is an interesting one because, having read obviously what Ruben said after the game, he said we were missing two things with wingers, one-on-ones and pressure. We know Harvey and Femi can do it. It was a matter of changing the dynamic of the game by bringing them on. Now, I might be completely alone when I say this, but one thing I've noticed a lot with Harvey Nibbs recently, I don't think I've seen him dribble past someone, and I might be completely making that up. One of his best games against Swindon, when he scored the hat trick. There's a few times where he was kind of knocking the ball back a bit, and I'm a bit like, you haven't really taken anyone on. And I thought I'd look into the numbers a little bit. And according to Who Scored, so if the stats are wrong, please don't shoot the messenger. He's only completed 0.9 dribbles, which is one of like the worst in the squad. So I thought it was kind of interesting that Sellers is focusing on like Nibbs being this dynamic winger that can take the game to people, when I think he doesn't really do that as much. He does offer stuff in the team. I'm not saying he doesn't offer anything. he offers stuff defensively and obviously contributes attacking wise. I mean, he came off the bench and scored. But I think Nibs might not be at the level we're expecting him to be at, but Aziz definitely is a confidence issue, and there definitely is a player in there, I think, despite what some fans say.
I'll agree on Nibs. I think that's a really interesting one, and I actually kind of think that physically in general he's a little bit lacking. Like, I don't, when you look at Nibs, he's very lanky. Like, he's not got a lot of meat on his bones, so to speak. And I agree, like, he doesn't take people on very often, doesn't go around people. You don't have to do that as a winger, right? Like, a lot of people get on Jack Grealish's case about the fact that he goes forward and then turns around and passes it back into the middle. But at the same time, like, in the league that we're in, where and especially if we're using that 4-2-2-2, we need, you know, a player to be able to get around his opposition player, especially in the small amounts of wide space that we take up. And Nibs doesn't really do that. I think he's a really smart player. Like, I'm not surprised that he gets, he scored a couple headed goals. I'm not surprised that he must be on four now with league and cup games. I'm not sure, Nibs, but it doesn't surprise me that he scores relatively often because he's good at popping up in the right position. I think that he's very much a mind over matter kind of player. And while things aren't going well for Sellers necessarily, they might not be going well for Nibs as well, because he's a guy that relies on sort of like a tactic or a strategy to be set up that'll allow him to succeed. So yeah, I think it's a really good point with Nibs.
Just kind of rounding off that conversation, I think it was a very, very dangerous thing for Sellers to come out and basically name Nibs Aziz, in terms of, you know, being worried about the goal drought and stuff like that, because it just almost focuses in on it a little bit more and kind of adds the pressure. Now, maybe that was his, maybe that was his design all along, and go, look, I'm just going to start chucking players out and saying these things. It wasn't horrific what he said, but I just think if you draw attention to it in terms of individuals, it becomes a bit more of an issue than it previously was. I still think Aziz, that there is a player in there somewhere, but I would agree with, you know, 99% of the fan base and the fact that we just haven't seen that yet. And it is difficult when you've got players, you know, out of form and out of confidence, because actually it becomes more and more frustrating. With Nibs, kind of on the fence, really. Like, I'm not hugely keen on him, but I'm not massively against him either. It's just kind of one of those players that's there. And I think we probably need to see more from both moving forward for them to be like, yeah, you know, first names on the team sheet stuff. So we'll see how that one pans out, really. just to round off the weekend and the FA Cup in general, away to Eastleigh. What a place that is. I used to spend a lot. I went to Portsmouth University many, many years ago, and I spent a lot of time in Eastleigh for reasons I won't mention right now. But what do we make of that draw, gentlemen? Ryan, you go first, mate.
I've actually been to Eastleigh twice, so lucky me. I went for the pre-season friendly that we had there a couple of years ago. I think we lost that game as well, which was, that was not fun. But I was sat in a leather seat though, so it was okay. And then the second time I went was actually with Maynard. I'm from Maynard, so I went away with a couple of my mates towards the end of the season. I think they lost about 3-1 that day as well. I've seen them lose twice. I think I'll still try and go, though. I'll make it a hat-trick. I'll try and go three times if I can.
You sat in a leather seat? What was that, yeah, like hospitality or something?
No. It was literally, like, in their stand, there was, like, a leather seat, and I was, like, a set of leather seats. I was like, what is this? It was cushioned and everything. I don't know if it's because of pre-season friendly, and, like, it was kind of, like, sit wherever, but, yeah, very
random.
Nice.
Random. Yeah. Really random. Well, I don't think there's going to be many tickets available for that one, really, but we'll see how we get on. Ross, in terms of the game, good opportunity to progress or another reason to be fearful?
Definitely a reason to be fearful after the Kidderminster game a few years back, right? The dying embers of the Paunovic era. It was the first thing that came to mind when I noticed that Eastleigh were National League, I will say. And then also quickly, I'll know I'm from that part of the world, which is quite funny. So I guess we've got both parts represented for that. I'm from Southampton. I mean, it'll be a good game. I'm looking forward to it. I always like playing non-league teams in the cup, even though, you know, the danger is on our side, so to speak. It always feels like, I don't know, this is one of the things that makes me love and appreciate English football above all other sports, is this just opportunity to play
nonsense fixtures in the middle of the season. It's great. The NBA has just added a in-season tournament, which is very much like an FA Cup thing. So, you know, we talk about the magic of the cup slowly sort of diffusing a little bit over in England, but they're bringing the magic of the cup straight to America now. So don't give up on it just yet. I love it.
Fair play. Well, they haven't got relegation yet, have they? And they need that. So that's, you know, maybe we're moving in the right direction. I quite like Eastleigh as a place. It's a bit like a leafier version of Bracknell, which is quite cool. And it's not far from Marwell Zoo either. And I love Marwell Zoo. Yep. So potentially a good day out if you don't get a ticket.
Can I just say on the draw as well, I can't be the only Reading fan that was sat there watching the first and second round draw going, not them, that'll be embarrassing, not them, that'll be embarrassing. And with the first round draw with MK, it was like, okay, right, if we lose to MK, not as embarrassing this time around. Yeah. Let's just not lose, hopefully.
And that's why first and second rounds of the FA Cup really are just, not the one really.
A second then to point out that Swindon got beat 7-4 by Aldershot, and they were, I think, 7-0 down at one point, Swindon. They managed to get it back to 7-4.
They did.
But yeah, it can be embarrassing, it has been.
Yeah, I mean, you know, plenty of clubs bigger than us. I'm not saying Swindon are, obviously. Don't stop listening at this point. But, you know, a lot of clubs that are bigger than us have fallen at these hurdles. So, yeah, look, you know, we'll see what happens. It's due to be the 2nd of December, I think, along those lines. I think it'll be picked up for TV, though. I don't think it'll stay on a Saturday, but that's just me wishful thinking. We'll see. Right, we're going to head straight into the mailbag. We've got a few little nuggets to get involved with. So we'll be right back after this short message.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, mailbag time. Before we go any further, Ross sent me some stats of our listeners. Not like personal information, not GDPR breach or anything, but...
I've got your national ID number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got it all. Basically, what it does is it breaks down the percentage and the amount of people that download this particular podcast from different podcast providers. And if you are one of the 6 people that listen to us on your Sony PS5, fair play, because that sort of blew my mind a bit, really. I'm still in the era of, like, the SNES, where you put the cartridge in and you, like, nothing's wireless, it's all linked up to it. So the idea that you can listen to us through a gaming console is pretty cool. So we appreciate anybody listening. But if you are one of the 6 people that downloaded last week's podcast on your PS5, we salute you. So thank you for that. Right, let's get into some actual proper questions rather than waffling about listeners, who we value very much, I have to say. Start with Ollie Strudwick. Why do you think Reading are so poor this season? Do you think the fans could be better and blame the owners less and focus on the poor performance on the pitch? And then he says, big fan of the pod, can't wait to get into it. Love that, Ollie. Thank you very much. Ryan, we're going to start with you, mate. Why are we so poor this season? Let's start with that one, first of all.
Just before we start, I'm just going to dispel the myth here. So part of the reason why this question was added is Ollie's actually he's a good friend of mine, and he's trying to give me a little bit of stick because he's a Man United fan, actually, and I've been giving him a little bit of stick about how much they moan about the Glazers. So hence the question. But going to his point, yeah, there could be some more pressure being put on Sellers. We've not been very good. But again, it kind of brings it round to the whole point of how much pressure can you put on a man that's working with both hands tied behind his back. To answer the question of why have we been so poor, potential tactical naivety in some games. He's still a younger manager himself. I mean, I don't think he's even managed 30. I might be wrong. Just over 30 games. So there could be an element of that. And also, again, you look at the squad we've built. We've signed some good players, don't get me wrong. But again, this squad is still very much academy players and players that we've been able to sign through seasons of transfer restrictions. And it wouldn't have been on the... I can imagine they would have been on the list of clubs, but maybe not at the very top. So that could be a potential reason why we've been a tadpole.
Yeah, I mean, the recruitment is it is hit and miss, I think, really, at this point. Like, there's been some really strange signings. You know, we can go back to Pereira and you think, well, what was the point of that? He's only just made his debut with no signs of injury. And I'm not saying he should be, you know, replacing Button, but to only have had him, you know, wait around for so long and then give him his first game at the, you know, the back end or the start of November even, is just seems a bit bizarre to me. So yeah, I think recruitment's an issue. I think really that one of the reasons we've been so poor, and hopefully Ross will back me up, is that it's just the pressure. It's just everything about the club is either wrong or heading in the wrong direction at the moment. And I think, you know, we all hoped, as we said last week, that we would be further up the table, of course. By now, we don't want to be bottom, but to be bottom by this stretch really is quite concerning, with or without the points deduction. So it's I think it's a culmination of things. I think it's very difficult to answer that fully. Do you, Ross, do you think we should be blaming the owner less? I mean, obviously, with, you know, Ryan's just rumbled Ollie here in terms of the fact that he's not actually a Reading fan or whatever, but, you know, would this be an outside perception, is it fair to say, of how other clubs perceive us right now? Not that we care as much, but do you think fans could be blaming the owner less?
I think it's a valid thing from a sporting standpoint, right? In terms of, like, you know, like, obviously, regardless of what's going on with the owner, there's no way that this club should be in last place in League One. Right? Like, it is a little bit ridiculous that that's the case. And you can say, well, we had a points deduction. Yeah, okay, but so have Wigan, and Wigan are out of the relegation zone already, whereas we are mired at the bottom of the league. So there's definitely sporting reasons. But I don't think the Reading fans aren't being honest about that. I think that we spent a good chunk of, especially like 2 or 3 weeks ago, discussing the formation problems. And I think Sellers has essentially been dragged kicking and screaming in the last few weeks into playing three men in the middle, certainly for that Portsmouth game and maybe elsewhere. So I think that it's difficult not to blame the owner when there's a new story about taxes every 4 weeks, right? And whereby we had to spend most of last week's podcast, which turned out to be a bumper podcast, discussing issues with the owner, discussing yet more things coming down. So, you know, we can talk about sporting stuff as much as we want, but when the season may have just been ended by, you know, the owner in November, then it's really kind of difficult to concentrate on those sporting sanctions. So, yeah, I think that the owner is the unfortunately the main issue.
I think there is a misconception here in terms of people just thinking that it's about this season, and, you know, it's really not. It's, you know, as we said last week, you know, when I was kind of with Star, we started this process into, and I, you know, people go, he didn't challenge enough or whatever. I can't bother to get into that now, but we had a conversation with club officials saying that we were unsure as to whether or not, or pretty, you know, clear that Dae Jong wasn't the man to take us forward, and that was 2.5 years ago. So this is a culmination of people just losing their rag, and I think, you know, that there might be to be fair to Ollie, you know, it's a valid point to bring up, but, like, you know, within the club this has been brewing for a long time, and really what's been needed is some sort of direction of to how to kind of move stuff forward, really. So, you know, I don't think it can be blamed enough. I think that he can, you know, we can go on forever talking about Dae Jong and his failings, but it is ultimately, you know, his fault. And kind of moving that forward is the most important thing. So, you know, we'll see how it pans out. There was kind of a little bit of optimism in last week's pod. If you hadn't listened to that yet, we had Sarah from, you know, the chair of Star on. And regardless of what you think of Star, you know, she made some really good points. So, yeah, you know, I think this will move pretty quickly. I think this month will be really key in terms of off the pitch stuff and how we move that forward. But yeah, it's not going to be easy to get out of this position that we're currently in on the pitch. There is still time to do that, but, you know, we're talking quite a big margin here. Dex says, after we all rightfully complained about Ince never using his subs to impact the game, does Sellers deserve some praise for his mostly, in brackets, good use of subs on a fair few games? Ross, Sellers and subs, what are we saying?
That's a good question, and it is a fair point. Like we would do some really poor substitutions during Paul Ince's reign. I think that made it into two or three of my Midweek Musings articles back in the day, just specifically complaining about how poor the substitutions were. I don't think that Celadus necessarily got his substitutes right every time, but he does at least seem to understand that, especially now that you can put five subs on, which I really like that rule, by the way. But especially now that you can do that larger group of subs, you might as well use them. You're getting basically, or you are, like if you don't count the goalkeeper, you're getting to replace half of your team, which is like a huge opportunity to put fresh legs into the team. It's a huge opportunity to change up what the opposition defense is seeing and having to deal with. So, yeah, I think it's worth praising that, you know, Sellers seems to know how to use his substitutes, but obviously it's just difficult to praise too much until we actually start winning more games. If we see, you know, Sellers works out how to use Vickers perfectly in the 65th minute each week to get us a goal or some sort of change to the way in which we're attacking down one side, then great. But at the moment, I'm just happy that he seems to understand that they are a tool in his toolbox. More than Paul Ince did, but I would still like to see some development and that turn into results.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, you know, Ryan, you could argue that, you know, his subs on Saturday changed the game. You know, Nibs came on, scored a goal. Aziz, you know, was all right, you know, in terms of actually trying to be proactive. Obviously didn't get the goal, as we've mentioned already. But, you know, are we seeing enough from the bench at the moment at the football club? Or is there more to come in terms of trying to change the complexion of the game and moving it forward?
We're definitely, as the question was, yes, he's better than Ince. So we're seeing more out of the subs that are coming on the pitch. But then again, not to do a hatchet job on Ince, it's not that too much harder to do a better job than what Ince did with subs. There have been a couple of occasions where I'm sat there at the select car and going, oh, I'm not sure about it. I think he's taking Kelvin E off in a couple of games. It's a bit like, I'm not sure about that one. We could have probably kept him on the pitch. He looked like our most dangerous threat. But then there's been occasions where he's got it right. I know we ended up losing the game, but the Portsmouth game when he brought Ben Elliott on, Ben Elliott for about the last 20 minutes, he put a ball through to Kelvin E, and there was another one as well. And I looked at it and went, okay, right, that's a positive change because he's coming on, he's doing something, he's trying to create. It's a different type of sub. As you said, we're bringing Nibs and Aziz on at the weekend. Bringing Elliott on in that game is a different, like we're trying to break down the defence in a different way. And I guess that's kind of what he's trying to do. He sees Nibs and Aziz as his direct players. They're going to be the ones that are sort of running at the defence, trying to run at the defence, trying to be a lot more of a direct threat, whereas Elliott's more the creative one. He'll come on, maybe pick a pass, retain the ball. So I if I was going to score it out of 10, I'd give it probably a 5. It's been good, but I haven't been like amazed. But then anything's better than Ince, as the question was, in my opinion.
Yes, yeah, it's a good point about Elliott against Portsmouth. It's one of those where you have to look at the game and judge it accordingly. I mean, there's been a couple of times when he's brought on players, maybe the Fleetwood game. Was it Fleetwood game? I can't remember, but he brought Charlie Savage on really late, and I just thought, what's the point? Like, it's just not, you know, these players are not going to be able to do anything at this point. Like, you know, the game's gone and all the rest of it. Was it? I don't think it was Fleetwood. I don't know. I've lost track of the games.
But that's a good point overall. Like, oftentimes, like when a substitute is sent on after the 90th minute, I mean, are there, like, what can the idea for that be outside of go out there, run around, make sure that you don't get beaten at a corner? And I'm kind of like, because there's not a whole lot more that you can do from an attacking standpoint of 5 minutes, right? Like, I'm just, yeah, it's always a very confusing one to me.
I think Ryan basically nailed it in the fact that the question was, is he better than Ince? Yes.
Yes.
In other areas, you could argue, you know, that he's not. But in terms of subs, yeah, of course, because we're seeing subs. With Ince, we never saw any subs. That was our point. He just kept it the same and just kept hoping for a positive outcome with the players on the pitch. That was never going to happen. So, yeah, it's an interesting one to analyse the subs. And hopefully when we do start to pick up wins and move up the table, it'll be a bit more of a discussion around whether or not they're actually impacting the game or not. But, you know, as it is, regardless of subs or not, we're losing games. So it's kind of a moot point because actually it doesn't really matter because no one's affecting the game. So, yeah, we'll see how that pans out. Bobbins is back with his weekly question. He says, Sellers doesn't seem to know his best 11. What players would make up your best 11 and how many of them are the same between you, Ross and Ryan? We could have done that as a pod, to be honest.
Right? Yeah.
I'll tell you what, let's make this easy because he likes to make everything difficult, as Bobbins. Ryan, pick me four players that would be, you would go, if you've got the whiteboard out, you're going to go, right, you're starting. Choose four players.
Nelson Abbey, number one on the team sheet. Recovery pace for the main factor, something we don't have. Just a general good, in my opinion, one of the only bright sparks out of the defence. Lewis Wing, experienced at this level, can pick a pass, okay defensively, can play as an 8 or a 6. Kelvin E, just because his height causes problems, he's a fairly decent dribbler, and I think he's got potential. And the last one's a tad tough, but I would probably edge Ben Elliott. I know he had a poor game on Saturday, and I know he got hooked at halftime. But the bits we've seen from Elliott at points, I'm not going to lie, I would go back to the Portsmouth sub. I looked at it and I went, how is this man not starting? And just, I think the combination of those, it would be a good spine of a team, no matter what formation you pick, whether it's 4-2-2 or you're going with a 4-3-3 or whatever it is. You have those four, I think there's an okay spine there, and they've been four of our fairly decent performers this season.
I did start panicking when he went, I can't think of a fourth. Just like, God, we've got a massive squad of players, but we can't actually think of four players that we'd want in the squad or the team straight away. Okay, so I've got Abby, Wing, Big E and Ben Elliott from you. Right. Ross, what have you got? Four players that have to start for you.
That have to start? Well, obviously I've got Tyler Bindon. Starts every single game for me without question. On the right side of centre back. I don't want to see a Harley Dean. I don't want to see a Sam Hutchinson. I don't want to see anything that's not called Nelson Abbey or Tyler Bindon playing centre back for Reading again. I understand that they conceded two goals against MK Dons this weekend. First time that they gotten to play together again for about a month or two. That's the centre back pairing I want. So I guess Abbey and Bindon are numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Like, those are the players that I want, you know, more than anything. And then I would always keep Kelvin in the team just because I think that he provides a floor in terms of what he gives you. We've talked about this before, but like, he always helps progress the ball forward. The ball doesn't tend to bounce off him like it used to do with Lucas Xiao sometimes, whereby he just couldn't do hold up play to save his life. He actually can move forward with the ball normally, a Hib Hatchiman. So that would be my third. Fourth is really quite tricky right now. I'll go with Wing as well. I just think creatively, he's the player that's gonna add that little bit of difference between the boxes. You know, like, I think we saw a few of them this weekend when obviously he had a little bit less pressure in his face. He's playing League Two opposition, but in terms of moving the ball efficiently from one box to the other, I think Wing is the most important player to that. So yeah, okay. I guess Bindon, Abbey, Wing, Kelvin.
Okay.
So I think I've said the exact same thing, but not Ben Elliott, basically. Tyler Bindon has to be.
Yeah, I mean, you settled on Wing at the end there. Okay.
Savage is very close for me. Savage and Wing are, like, Wing to me is like the player this season who's going to be the most ready to do exactly what we need between the boxes, but Savage is getting there.
Yeah, okay. I'm going Abbey. I don't think there's a Reading fan currently watching the team that would go, do you know what? Don't worry about that. You know, like, we're not playing Nelson Abbey. Like, he starts. Whether he's, you know, whether the midfielder making him look better because they're not doing their job like they did at Charlton, you know, for me, Abbey was great on a day, but only because he was mopping up everyone else's rubbish. So Abbey is in there. Savage, for me, goes straight in. I just don't think we've seen the best of him. And I think you could say that about a lot of players, but the potential for Charlie Savage, I think, is absolutely huge. I'm also going to go Ben Elliott because, again, I don't think we've seen what we need to see from him. And the other one I'm going for is Vickers. And the reason I'm picking those three, so leave Abbey out because we've all agreed that it's him. Those three, for me, are the most naturally talented players in the squad. in terms of what we need to do moving forward. So, yeah, I think the only common denominator we've got is Abby. I think we've all got Elliot. No, you haven't, Ross. So, yeah, I mean, we're saying Abby, Elliot's popped up, Big E, and Lewis Wing as well. I'm still not sold on Lewis Wing. I don't want this to turn some sort of like agenda against him, because we had this debate a couple of podcasts ago. It's really not that at all. I'm just not sure that we've really, you know, if we're going to stick with this nonsense formation, I'm just not really sure what the best combination is. And sadly, the man who's paid to decide that doesn't either. So that's really good. That's really positive. Do you know what's really interesting about this, though, before I pass on to you, Ross? We haven't picked a goalkeeper. Not one of us has said a goalkeeper.
No, yeah, there's not one that I'm super, super confident in there. And then I was going to say it's also interesting that nobody's mentioned McIntyre at all. Not that he's like one of our, you know, like one of the players who's made like a huge difference this season, but he's a player that is still playing in the team that was playing at championship level and doing okay, not doing amazing, but doing okay, especially when playing in defensive mid. So I find it kind of interesting that we don't mention him, because the main reason I always pick Bindon is because I don't think that our defense can pass out without Bindon. Abby can use his legs and get out there a bit. Like break the lines a little bit, but Bindon's really the only one in the group of the back four that can pass through the lines, in my opinion, especially off his right foot. But McIntyre can do it. That's one of McIntyre's biggest skills, with his left foot. But it's just interesting that regardless of that, just not getting a mention right now, and played championship football for Reading. But yeah, not high on fans' minds right now.
Yeah, go on, Ryan. Sorry, mate.
I was just going to say, just to build on the point about McIntyre, I think there's a lot, especially the fact we haven't picked him, could be something to do with recency bias. I can't actually think how many appearances McIntyre's actually made this season. But one thing I've kind of been thinking a bit of recently, obviously Hutchinson was brought into the sides for a lot of the time to add a bit more steel into the midfield, and we've seen Craig play there as well. But when I saw this question come through, actually, I did kind of put together a little draft of what I would think could be a team we could play. And if we were going to play this 4-3-3 going forward, and we have these 2-8s that where Wing and Savage played against Portsmouth, I wouldn't be opposed to McIntyre just sitting in front of the centre-backs and playing in sort of that 6 where he just sits there, breaks the game up, and gives it to Savage or Wing just to do whatever. And like the proper throwback to football, where it's like, your job is to win the ball and you're going to give it to someone that can play. McIntyre can play, I'm not saying he can't play. He's decent at that, but even in a 4-2-2-2 or 4-3-3, whatever formation, I feel like if you put McIntyre next to a creator, I think he would actually look okay in the DM role. Better than he would at centre-back, and probably better than left-back, because he hasn't exactly got the most pace in the world.
People that I speak to who have had coaching background within the club and you know, work within the community trust, shall we say, they often say that Tom McIntyre is one of the most talented players they've ever seen. And we're talking about someone who's had years of experience of coaching. So that's quite a feat, I think, really. I think with Tom McIntyre, we haven't really worked out as a club where he should be and where, what's actually going on. So I think it's an interesting point that you put him in that position, Ryan, because I would probably do that as well. I think there's always potential with these players. I think we can isolate players and go, you know what, they'd be in this team, they'd be in that team, or whatever. But we just don't know, you know. And Sellers doesn't know what he's doing really. He doesn't know his best team. He certainly doesn't know what the best formation to play in with this team is. It's 3-5-2, by the way, just in case anyone's wondering. But you know, that's going to have to be sorted really quickly, whether that's with Sellers as a manager or whether that's with someone else, really. Thanks for that, Bobbins. Really appreciate, you know, you chipping in as always, and it wouldn't be your mailbag without you. So yeah, thanks for that one. Last sort of question statement from Professor Keyboard at Jungle Gym. Love that. What a great handle. Nice. I forgot to put, and this is hashtag gamblerware, by the way, I forgot to put my customary £5 bet on Reading to win this weekend. Does this now mean I don't have to bet on them on Tuesday? I don't know. Probably.
I've given up.
Do you know what? I'm part of like a group. So there's three of us. So basically, you spend £10 every 3 weeks, if that makes sense. And it's two Reading fans, so me and another Reading fan and a QPR fan. And every single week without fail since like week two or three of the season, the QPR fan has always chosen the team that we're playing. And he's pretty much always been right. And it's really frustrating that A, that he's a QPR fan, and B, that he's...
To be fair, Ben, you could just choose the team that QPR are playing every week and end up with much the same effect. So
they're not great at the moment, are they?
No, exactly.
People in glass houses and all that.
Yeah.
Joker. It's difficult. I just wouldn't waste your money on Reading, to be honest with you. It's just pointless.
Are we talking in the betting sense or the ticket sense there?
Ticket sense is a whole different ball game, but the betting sense is definitely a waste of money. So
yeah. Not the gambler's choice right now.
No, not the gambler's choice at all. Talking of gambling, in a way, we are... Actually, there's no link to it whatsoever. I don't know what I'm trying to do, some sort of rubbish radio host. There's absolutely no link to gambling whatsoever for the next game, but we are going to talk about the next two games, which hopefully we will get a win and maybe someone might get some money out of if they bet on us to win. I don't know what I'm saying, but we're going to head into the preview right now after this very short break.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Welcome back to the Tilehurst End podcast, episode 358, brought to you in association, as always, with ZCZ Films. We're going to talk about, well, mainly the Bristol Rovers game, because that is tomorrow, less than 24 hours away from when we're recording now. And then we'll have a little bit of a chat about Shrewsbury, and then we'll finish on a tiebreaker style question to round off the pod. Right, Bristol Rovers, the gas. At home tomorrow night under the lights at the SCL, 8 p.m. kickoff. Tickets are still available. This won't come as a surprise to anybody listening to this. I don't know how much they are. I don't really care, but I will be there, as will Ryan. Ross won't be because he can't be bothered, but whatever. Realistically, we need to win this game, don't we, gents? This is what we're saying. Ryan, what do you anticipate from the game? Do you feel like, you know, Saturday might be a catalyst for us in terms of the win against the MK Dons? Do you think it's going to be much the same? Do you think the pressure is going to return? Will we actually see a full 90 minutes of football based on events that are going off the pitch? What is your overall kind of vibe of it at the moment?
I'd love to say that we're going to build momentum and this is it. This is the turn of our season. But if I'm brutally honest, I can see it being your typical freezing cold Tuesday night down the SEL. Boring, but it'd be a very close sort of, I'm going to say hard fought in quotation marks game where it's kind of cagey. I mean, I know they're managerless since they've sacked Jerry Barton. I think we have got more quality than them, but again, it's whether the pressure will tell. Obviously, we're hearing rumblings on Twitter of potential protests. How much is that going to play effect on the players? If you listen to all the people that sit around me, they seem to think that, yes, it plays an absolute part and it's the sole reason why we aren't doing so well, which, make of that what you will. But I think we should have enough to beat them. We should have enough to beat them. And my heart's kind of telling me we're going to sneak a 2-1 or a 1-0. But my head's telling me, come on, be sensible and get ready for the inevitable 1-0 in the last minute to Aaron Collins' winner, who apparently is their best player at the moment. I did have a quick look at the stats as well. They're expected to, on the XGA this season, they're expected to concede the most. So they've, by the look of it, got quite a leaky defence. Whether we can capitalise it or not, different question.
Well, I mean, look, they're sat in 15th place with 19 points, which, to be honest, I would literally take both your hands off for right now. You know, they're fairly well placed to make a bit of a run at the playoffs. You know, they're a little bit of a way out, but it's not impossible. You know, you look at Stevenage in sixth on 26 points. So, you know, they're kind of in and around that bracket of clubs that could push on. Sacking Jerry Barton is an interesting one, I guess, you know, because their form hadn't been that bad, but we're led to believe it wasn't anything to do with footballing reasons. you know, Ross, what we haven't played these guys since 2001, I believe, in the league. What are you going to make of, or what do you anticipate the crowd to be from a Reading point of view? Do you think people are now at the point where they just can't be bothered anymore? Do you think that there's going to be more interest because it's a local derby, in inverted commas? You know, is it one of those kind of games that you look at and go, actually, I'm really glad I was there for whatever reason? Or is it one that you just kind of stay away from as much as you possibly can?
No, I think actually, thanks to the good work of, you know, our friend Sarah and some of the other people at Star and Sell Before We Die and all of these things, I think there's energy around the building as much as the club at the moment, in that, you know, there are a lot of people at the last game because of the march. And yes, it's a Tuesday night, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see more people than we usually did on a Tuesday night. And actually, it's worth saying, attendances in general this season have been, I know we can fill that stadium more, but looking at the attendances around the rest of League One, I'm quite proud of what Reading fans have done consistently this season. Obviously, the away fans are amazing. We all know this. They've been going for over a year and filling out those away ends and seeing no real good results. But I do think it's worth pointing out that Reading end up pretty high on the list of average attendances every week. And hopefully with that good momentum that Sarah's helped and Star and Sell Before We Die, like I said, have helped to generate with the march at the last home game, I'm hoping some of that carries on. So, yes, I can't be bothered to get there. Seems like it'll be cold. Definitely going to be colder here, though, I'll point out. I'm hoping that the decent size attendances will continue.
I said this to my dad at the weekend. I don't know what it is, but it seems, you know, where I sit in B13 of the Dolan, it seems to get colder every year. And I don't know if that's because, like, people are not actually going there and you don't have the warmth and the love or whatever of people around you. But it's just, it is one of the coldest places I've ever been. It's the SDL.
It's like, stadiums, it's just, isn't it, though? It's like, you know, you're sitting there and it's cold concrete, cold metal. Like, everything just gets freezing cold. And then you're sitting still for 90 minutes as well. So, like, your body isn't generating any heat or anything like that. They always feel like they're the worst football stadium sometimes.
Yeah.
For me, the DW is definitely up there. Oh, Wigan, freezing. It is honestly, it's open-ended, not as bad as the SEL. I've been to Wigan twice.
I went to university at Bournemouth and I worked for that club, and that was before they had a fourth wall. So the wind would just come flying in from the empty third stand. That was freezing cold, that stadium.
We could ask this next week. What is the coldest stadium you've ever been in this country watching Reading Football Club?
That's a great question, actually, for listeners. All right, so mailbag next week. What's the coldest away game?
Coldest you've ever been at a football ground. Just going back to the attendances, you know, the away support has been absolutely phenomenal. And it really has, like, that word gets banded around a lot in football, and, you know, support's great, but actually, you know, we just sold out Wickham. I know it's the short trip that we'll make this season, but you still got to go and buy a ticket, right? You still got to travel there. You still got to watch the team probably lose without being pessimistic. So, you know, the away support has been fantastic. And talking of away games, we do head off to Shrewsbury on Saturday after the Bristol Rovers game. They currently sit 18th with 17 points, which again is a really enviable position to be in compared to where we are. But, you know, like you said, Ryan, you know, on paper, with most of these clubs, we should have enough to beat them. We're just not doing it. And you know, you look at these two games, Bristol Rovers at home, Shrewsbury away. In your mind right now, what would you settle for in terms of a points return from both of those games?
In my mind, I'd take 2 points. In my heart, I'm saying I want 4. I would love 3 at home to Bristol Rovers and take a point away at Shrewsbury. I'm going on Saturday, so I'm currently on about a 2-month losing streak at the moment. So it's not going well. But I'd take 2. If you said to me, that's horrible to say because they are worse than us, but I'd take 2. They are missing one of their best players as well. Shea Dunkley got sent off against, it was 2 games ago, so this is the third game, I believe, I saw earlier. So they're missing their centre half, unless He's come back, which I may not be aware of, but I'm pretty sure he's out.
It's a great name for a football player. Shea Dunkley. Love that.
He's good, Ryan, isn't he, Ben? I mean, like, we don't know this stuff about what's going on.
We don't really go in that far.
That seems like a lot of work, Ryan.
Yeah, can't be bothered. We're massive.
Lovely part of the world, isn't it? And is it Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury?
With our own Shrewsbury club. Yeah, do you know what? I think anything, any points would be decent. Ross, are we likely to see two wins this week? Or is that just nonsense talk?
If you get the first win, then like I genuinely think we'll win the second one. But like it just like I'm so, I think both of us or both of you guys have said at some point in this podcast, like the amount of times we've said this is the moment that it turns around and then it isn't. So let's see what happens tomorrow against Bristol. If we win that one, then yeah, I back us to go and beat Shrewsbury as well. But like we need some sort of momentum. Maybe now that we've won a cup game, there's some momentum in there, and we can move on from that. But at some point, something's got to change, right?
From a completely selfish point of view, and I know this is probably not something I should be wishing as a Reading fan, but I have a very good friend who is a Wickham fan, and obviously we haven't won away from home in a year. He has been slagging Sam Smith off as well. He's not rating him very much as a striker. So part of me would love, if we aren't going to win against Shrewsbury, fine. We get to Wickham, we just win 3-0, he scores a hat-trick, or even I'll take a 1-0 win with a Sam Smith winner. And that for me, that will bring me peace.
Nice.
Yeah, fair play. I mean, as a side note, before the season started, I touted Shrewsbury as a game that I would go to. And when the tickets came up, Sim was like, "Are you still going to Shrewsbury?" And I was like, yeah. And I looked, I always work out how long it would take to get the train or drive or whatever. It's basically in Wrexham. I was like, "What, damn, that's miles away, given where we actually are. Like, you might as well go.
That's miles away. Got a nice little town. Like, go on, Ben, it'll be good. It's near Wales.
It's in a place called Shropshire. I mean, I've literally never heard of it. What is Shropshire? Is that a county?
Sort of like Wales, but in England.
I go to football with my grandparents, and they've been very adamant, no away games while we're this bad. They've been supporting them for years. They were like, nope, we're not going away, we're not going away. And randomly they said to me a few weeks ago, "Oh, do you fancy Shrewsbury?" And I was like, yeah, go on then. Reading are a club, right? Like, we're a club, I can't... You say to me, "Do you want to go to this game? It could be Carlisle away, or we play Fleetwood on Tuesday night." I'll just go if someone offers. I know I'm probably going there to watch them lose as well, which is very sad, but we stay positive.
Yeah. By all accounts, you know, it is supposed to be a very nice part of the world and a good stadium, but, well, for this level is what I mean. But, I just looked at it, I was like, I didn't think it was that far away. I thought it was like Cheltenham or something, but anyway, whatever. We digress. Right, okay, so we're predicting a fairly positive week on the pitch, fingers crossed. Last kind of thing to finish us off, and we've sort of organically developed this Team Ross versus Team Ben scenario, and even Sarah just chucked it in the other week accidentally. I was like, we didn't even talk about it, but she used it for something. You may have seen that Alf, our beloved Adam the Funder, is still scoring goals at the ripe old age of an older age.
36. I'm about to make this point. Don't worry. Carry on.
36. Right. Okay. Yeah. Fine. So really, we sort of wanted to force the issue a little bit and talk about it. The question would be hypothetically, you know, normally we try and do things that are within the club's control. Like, for example, should Tyler Bindon play right back or centre back or whatever? Better question than that, but you know what I mean. So the question this week for Team Ross and Team Ben is, would you take Adam Lafondre back right now to play in the blue and white hoop shirts of Reading FC? I'm saying no. I know that Ross is going to completely disagree with me and he's going to say yes. And he's got some facts to back up his choice. And then I'm going to come to you right at the end, Ryan, after I've had my little bit, and you're going to decide whether you side with me or you decide with Ross. Yeah? Make sense?
Sounds good.
Right. Ross, you're saying yes. Why?
All right. I didn't... So, Adam Lafondre, one of my favourite players of all time, you know, like that goal against Southampton at St Mary's to win us the championship, you know, it lives rent-free in my head and will forever. So, I mean, one of my favourite players of all time. That said, I hadn't been thinking about him much until he popped up at Hibernian again this season.
A few ex-Reading players there. I think he's there with Obita as well, which is kind of fun.
And McDermott.
And McDermott, there you go, there you go, perfect. So, all right, so Adam Lafondre, he's 36 years old, he's about to turn 37, okay? How many goals do you think Adam Lafondre has scored since he turned 33? Because the answer is...
I'm going to go with 30.
55.
He scored
55.
He scored five
goals since he scored 33. And so you look at that, right, and you go, oh, yeah, but, like, that's in the A-League, right, the Australian League. So where does the A-League rank in terms of, like, world leagues? Well, I did some looking up. Just below League One. It's literally League One and then A-League, okay? When do you think the last time Adam Lafondre scored 10 goals in an A-League season was? It was last season. So he's still scoring double figures of goals in a league that's almost the level of League One. He started the season pretty hot with Hibernia, and he's gone off the boil a little bit there. But he's not starting games as much as he was at the start of the season. We have a lot of, like, strikers who can sort of, like, press or, you know, do the fancy new parts well. And, you know, I'll talk lovely things about doing the fancy new things well all the time, but score a goal, that's what you're there to do as a striker, right? And Adam Lafondre still scores goals, which is remarkable.
55 goals
since he scored 33. The last four seasons, 55 goals.
Jesus Christ,
it's outrageous. The man has scored the guy's goal scoring record, because I think a lot of you guys will know that he's been with I think it's Melbourne City for quite a while before he went to Hibernia. His goal scoring record there is insane. It's like over a goal every other game, which for a striker who played there mostly over his 30s, I think entirely above his 30s, that's pretty impressive.
I think he had a loan spell in India as well. I think he went to Mumbai City.
And he got to double figures in that season as well. Just a poacher, an old school poacher.
Right, so, well, obviously what I'm going to say is completely redundant now, because I didn't realize he scored 55 goals. It's what happens when you look at the internet, isn't it, Ross? Just cheating.
Yeah, right. Research.
What was my reasons? Two reasons. One, never go back. It never works well, to be honest. I'm still hoping Sam Smith bucks that trend, but we're still yet to see it. And the second reason, from a personal point of view, Reading fan, like, I've never seen an away end move the way it did against Southampton that night. And, you know, I don't think anything that he could ever do for this football club would ever top that. And I always think to myself, actually, do you know what? That is just a great memory to have of supporting a club that was just on the up at that point. And, you know, like, you know, against West Brom and Chelsea the following season, just fantastic, absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, for me, I always like to keep those memories as a positive thing and not kind of ruin them by bringing a player back for a second time and, you know, doing like the farewell tour, you know, and like you get bands that can hardly sing and walk and stuff, but you still go and pay 60 quid to go and see him. It's a bit like that. But obviously, if you know, someone has scored 55 goals in 3.5 years, you're not going to turn them down. So I will ask the question anyway, Ryan, to be polite, but who are you siding with today? Team Ben?
Before I make my final answer, I just want to throw one question back to Ross that I maybe shot down with here. Obviously, Lafondre played for Bolton, and I might be wrong here, but did he play in League One with Bolton, and do you know how many goals he got in that season, if he did?
No, I think
he... Yeah, Ross, ask you Google that. See what they say.
Don't worry, I'm on... And by the way, Ryan, I do like whoscored.com as well. That's a good site. I tend to use FBRF, and that's where I am right now.
FBRF's not bad as well.
FBRF's a good one. Championship. He transferred away to the A-League. Bolton got relegated. So his final season in the Championship, he was 30 years old. He scored 15 goals in 19 starts. Ridiculous.
Sorry, Ben. I'm going to have to side with Ross here. I was a bit hesitant with it because, obviously, as much as it pained me, last year with Shane Long wasn't exactly a fairy tale. There was moments, though. There was moments. He scored against Cardiff, and he scored in the third round of the FA Cup, which is what he did back then.
Ryan.
If Lafondre's scoring 55 goals since he's 10, was it 33? It offers something a bit different to the strikers we've got as well, with it just being a fox in the box.
What, you mean like being prolific?
Yeah.
Just scoring goals.
Yeah, mate. Just scoring goals. And we spoke about substitutions earlier, and who better to bring back to the club than the king of the substitutes, than Adam Lafondra?
I mean, the man loves goals. He just adores scoring goals, doesn't he?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, I probably will agree with Ross as well, actually. I didn't realise it was 55 goals. So, well done. Yeah, you've done your research. Excellent. You've won an argument using facts.
Wow. Yeah. Do you want to hear them real quick? Because they are really good. I'll give you that very quickly before we end here. 5 years ago, 20 and 26. What a man. And then 11 and 20 for Mumbai City, while also scoring 3 and 5 for Sydney. 7 in 21, 10 in 18, and then he's got 3 in 11 for Hibernian. What a wonderful man. Regardless of which side you fall on, that is classic football heritage right there.
And I think the big positive to come out of all of it, if hypothetically he did come back, would be the running shirt with Lafondra 9 on the back. That would be up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that on to end on that note, let's hope we get some goals this week and get some points on the board and start moving up where we need to be in terms of staying in this league. But we will see. That is just about all we've got time for this evening on podcast episode number 358. You've been listening to myself, Ben, joined by Ryan and, of course, Ross. Ryan, have you enjoyed yourself? Second time outing, next time you get a hat-trick ball.
It's been great. It's a brace, I think, as they called it. No, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me on again. Hopefully get another chance to speak to you guys soon.
Yeah, no worries. And Ross, I will see you. I think it's just me and you next week. We've had a glut of guests, haven't we? So we'll just get back to me and you for a bit. And
it's going to be
talk
quiet.
About two wins. Imagine that. Imagine the scenes in the studio.
We'll just be ready to talk about football again, I think, by then.
Yeah, hopefully. Listen, thank you very much to everyone listening, whether you listen on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PS5s, Firefoxes, whatever they're called, everything else. We appreciate you. We thank you for your time, as always. Hopefully it's got you through an hour and a bit of your week. And hopefully you will join us next week when we can talk about some more positives on the pitch, hopefully. Have a really good week. Take care of yourselves. And we will see you next time on the Tireless End podcast. Come on, you Oz.